you now!
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Kill James Bond, the bonus episode where we do not do the voice because we are not that podcast.
Today, I will not do the voice.
That's right. I am Alice Caldwell-Kelly. My pronouns are she and her. Joining me are, go, one of you.
My name is Abigail Thorne. My pronouns are also she and her.
I am Devon. My pronouns are they, them.
And we have a guest. Go, introduce yourself.
No, you should probably introduce
No, I'm not going to...
Use the thing. Say the thing.
The thing.
Very helpfully written out for us to read.
Fine. You know what? All right. Fine.
Don't even cut this. Leave this.
And we're being joined by Shannon Strucci. Shannon is an editor and video essayist who is the film correspondent for Struggle Session, a host and player on the Actual Play podcast Critical Bits, host on the Fight Together miniseries for the One Piece podcast. Shannon, what's your pronouns?
She and they, thank you.
Hell yeah.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Shannon is also the person, I mean, Shannon's bio, I mean, undersells it. Shannon is also the person who popularized the term parasocial relationships.
Wow.
Genuinely, like, one of the better video essayists out there. Like,
I feel so close to you now that I know that you you popularized that. I feel like I really know you.
Yeah, Shannon is also my best friend.
The creator of Fake Friends.
Yeah, Fake
part
Friends.
Part 2. Which, is that currently up still, or is that down?
It's up. It's back up. There was a problem. There was a 40-second or less clip of a Kanye West song, so it was manually taken down for like 3 months. It was a manual copyright strike that was like impossible to fight. Eventually, a fan of mine who works for Google fixed it.
Kanye West himself.
Kanye West himself.
We all
hates
love
fake
working
friends.
For YouTube. We love making video essays, and none of us are making career plans to get out of it.
Absolutely not. No, it's important that you have that parasocial relationship where you believe that. And we who have like a social relationship with each other, to which you are not invited, we watched Lupin the Third, part one.
Well, we watched Lupin the Third first.
Part one is a different thing.
Oh God. Okay. We're minutes in already. I've fucked up.
Listeners, what you have to understand is that Alice is cool.
Yes.
Alice is like doing things like having sex and like being married.
Yep.
Whereas the other three of us, we have seen anime. We know what anime is. We are weebs to various degrees.
I don't think that's...
Alice is basically like James Bond in fucking You Only Live Twice in this one. In that she's just wandering around like a foot taller than everyone else. Saying a high ogazimus, like it's a whole other world.
She's just become entirely Japanese.
This is a fish out of water podcast for Alice, who is now going to have to listen to three people who enjoy anime. I'm not going to call myself a weeb, but we're just going to chat about anime for a bit because we have got the foremost scholar on Lupin the Third to come on. And we're going to pick the hell out of their brain for however long this runs.
Yeah, I will say up front that I did enjoy watching this movie a lot. So this is going to be a nice, relaxed episode for me because, A, you guys don't expect me to know anything about it, including, I guess, the name of the movie that I watched and took notes on. But also, like, it was just, I had a nice time, and I don't often have a nice time because the meat and potatoes of this podcast is movies that we don't like. So I suppose I should introduce the character of Arsène Lupin the Third a little bit here, which is he is the grandson of a public domain gentleman thief from 19th century French literature.
Was not public domain when he was conceived in the manga. No, he just stole the character. And it caused a lot of copyright problems for like decades. I think even now it causes problems in some countries.
Yeah, and he's a fun thief. He has a little sort of posse who we will get into, and well, I mean, sort of exists in this timeline outside of time, it seems. Because this movie is simultaneously set in the 40s, the 60s, and yesterday, which is great. But we start off.
There's different seasons of the anime, aren't there? Or maybe we should, before we get into the plot summary, let's dive into, and Shannon can help us explain who Lupin is a bit. There's different series of Lupin the Third, of which I've seen the second Lupin the Third Part 2, which is sort of ambiguously 60s, 70s, and it follows this kind of like vibe where every week the gang are in a different country and they're like trying to steal a treasure. So they're like, they're in Cairo and they're stealing King Tut's mask, or they're in Rio and they're like pulling some kind of scam, and it always goes wrong, and they always like just don't get the treasure, usually because Lupin has to like play the hero, and because he's like a heart of gold, and they're always he's got the same regular characters who always come with him, who will meet, and he's always being pursued by a bumbling inspector. And that's the long and short of it. And there's various other versions, aren't there, Shannon? There's like some versions where it's like really dark and violent.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the original manga, Lupin's just an insane rapist. It's pretty awful. It's like hard to read. It's like styled after Mad Magazine and like European artists. It's like in that art style, and it's just very nihilistic. There's a recent from 2012. There's a miniseries Sayo Yamamoto did, the woman who did Yuri on Ice and other anime. That's sort of about Fujiko, and it's about childhood sexual assault and patriarchy and like the male gaze. It's like a feminist avant-garde miniseries. And then part 4 is really stupid, and MI6 clones Leonardo da Vinci, and it's like evil anime Leonardo da Vinci. And then part 5, they really tried to update it, so it's about like the dark web and facial, like AI facial recognition. I really don't like part 5, but a lot of people do. And about how the CIA interferes in other countries' governments.
In my nerd research, in order to become more like you nerds and less of a Chad, I found...
Disagree.
It's
fine.
This animation franchise of Lupin the Third is, like, the word most often used is storied, right? I looked at the number of things that they have made, and I sort of got vertigo. I was like, oh, God, do I have to watch all of these? And no, thankfully, I have you guys to guide me through it.
It is massive, isn't it? It's like Dragon Ball Z levels of huge, but for some reason hasn't had the same kind of cultural penetration outside of Japan as, like, Dragon Ball has.
It's really big in Italy. For whatever reason, it caught on. And if you go to the Lupin wiki, every episode talks about the censorship in the Italian episodes. I guess they heavily censored part 2 when it aired. It had a really big cultural impact there.
What if a French-Japanese master thief was Italian? Also, I should point out, this film, like, mostly we're talking about anime here, but this film is not animated. This film is CGI. We are on some Polar Express shit.
Yeah, but it looks good. And this film is like based much more on Lupin the Third Part 2, so it's got that kind of like fun tone. But it is once again set in a different time period with like different rules of continuity. It's just fine. You're just going to let it wash over you.
Yeah.
The thing about the animation for this that I will say is, if this is like it was for me, the first Lupin media you're consuming, the first time you see the way he moves and talks, you will take irreparable psychic damage. Because this man has an exceedingly elastic face, and he's very expressive. You get used to it quite quickly, but it's very, very jarring.
And like,
also
nobody else is rendered quite like him. So it's like a sort of cast full of relatively normal looking people, and then this elastic clown, which I guess makes sense.
Fucking Bugs Bunny ass. Well, he's kind of like a toon, and that's how he keeps winning, is that like
people
shoot at him, but like he's just got this kind of Bugs Bunny style where he like just always like slips away.
It really is some Who Framed Roger Rabbit shit. But
I specifically wrote that. I said this is a classic sort of anime or Western cartoon thing going on where physics only applies to other characters.
Yes.
Like Lupin and to a lesser extent his dudes, his posse, which we'll get into at some point. They can just sort of do essentially anything.
Yeah, physics, drops. Laws, morality, you know, it's all kind of optional for Lupin.
Yeah. So like this is broadly speaking a sort of lighthearted, upbeat sort of little bit heist, little bit tomb raiding sort of movie. And so obviously we have to start in Nazi-occupied France.
Of course.
And
because it's Indiana Jones, it's every Indiana Jones movie at once.
Once again, Dr. Jones, he says, there's nothing you can possess. There is a guy with that exact accent who will show up later.
Yeah, and he rocks.
Yeah, he does. We have an archaeologist, Professor Bresson, who has sort of a diary in a sort of enormous clockwork book safe. And he seals this away. The Nazis then come and try to obtain this from him. And he's like, no, I will never give this to you. And so they just shoot him. So we have our Nazi murder minutes into the film. And his I guess son and wife and their child, their infant child, escape in a car, and there's a car chase where the little girl has this diary, which is in this sort of clockwork safe thing, and they get chased down by the Nazis, and there's a massive car crash in which only she survives. Again, light-hearted movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's all like very slickly animated, and
oh, it really is.
It must be said, the animation is gorgeous.
It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful, and like we see this because the very next thing, right? We don't spend long in the 1940s here at all. We jump straight to the 60s? Question mark.
Via some amazing opening credits, and also the Loop on the Third theme song, which is consistent throughout all adaptations, and fucking goes. Like that was actually what convinced me to watch the series when I first heard the theme song. I was like, damn, this is
he
great.
Has his own background music.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Mm. Some guys just like chorusing his name in the background. It's very good. Like the intro sequence is a 3D animated Bond intro, and it looks phenomenal.
It's got like clockwork parts moving around. It's great. Yeah. Yeah, so we are now in the 1960s, and it's kind of like my other big reference here is sort of like The Incredibles, where you don't have a distinct time period so much as you have these are design things that appeal to me, and I'm going to put all of them in. Every single little detail of this movie is like very, very closely observed in terms of like, this is what the cars look like. And they have, you know, very sort of 60s curves, but they're all very closely curated.
I mean, I personally have run a D&D game before. So the concept of these are just things that I think are cool and I'm going to put them all together really does appeal to me intrinsically.
This movie is, and I say this not at all disparagingly, a bit like having a story told to you by like an excitable child. And then they drive over the cliff and the parachute, and it's just like, yeah, cool. You just, so long as you're able to like engage with it in that way and like kind of let it wash over you, it's fucking great. So we're in the 1960s, we're at the Museum of Archaeology in Paris, and
Gay Paris,
and we got the same clockwork book, well, the book's contained within this clockwork safe, and they're exhibiting it, amidst incredibly tight security, lots of, like, faceless security goons, and then a guy comes running up and he hands the inspector in charge a message. It's like we found out that the master thief Lupin is gonna do his next crime, and the note is of course from Lupin, who has written, "I am going to do my next crime by stealing this thing."
He always does it.
Constantly. This every episode.
Yeah.
Crime incoming. Care of me, Lupin.
It's called "We Do a Little Trolling." I love this a lot because he, of course, his ruse is to disguise himself as a security guard and be like, well, better take this to safety. But he gets outwitted. He gets foiled by a young woman who we initially think is a security guard who, like, handcuffs him. And we get to see our first glimpse of his various nemeses, right? Because Inspector Zenigata, my favorite guy in this movie. My guy.
This is a dude right here.
The guy who you heard in the initial, like,
Lupin! Got you now!
You're going to hear that so many times.
Yeah, he's good. Zenigata is always pursuing them all over the world. Like, he's such like a flat foot. There's some episodes where it's like kind of implied that he may have romantic interest in Lupin. Like, there's one in which Lupin fakes his death and Zenigata is like, very, very upset by this.
It's like, I loved you. It's like, oh, that's pretty gay. There's some stuff too.
There's actually the anime has a lot of like, I'm pretty sure in the anime, like Jigen is a lot more implied to be gay for Lupin.
Mm.
And there's one episode where they give Jigen a girlfriend and it's like, I don't believe you.
there's a lot of stuff like in part three, Jigen reads gay porno. And in part one, there's a scene where Lupin's on a date with Fujiko and Jigen is like really jealous and angry, throwing darts at a dartboard with a heart on it. It's like, I wonder if that means anything. In some of the movies, it's more of a brotherly like love, but in a lot of the anime, it's like really, really.
I think in one of them as well, Jigen is the only person to resist being seduced by Fujiko.
Mm.
Like she drops a towel in front of him and is left one naked, and he like picks it up with his gun and like puts it back on her. Like,
it's just disgusting.
His reputation.
Dude's rock. So, yeah.
If you want an aesthetic touch point for what Zenigata looks like, imagine Dick Gumshoe from the Ace Attorney games.
Gumshoe was really heavily influenced by.
Yeah, just him, but very angry.
In the manga, Monkey Punch talked about he wanted a human Tom and Jerry. They're just like eternally chasing each other.
So yeah, he's like backed up by this sort of wall of cops who are like cops. Yeah, an incredible bit of physical comedy where you just have these faceless cops and like tin helmets, and they just kind of move as a mass of one. There's a bit later on where like Zenigata sends them in like single file after Lupin, but he stops too quickly and they pile up on his back. It's fantastic. So they make a grab for Lupin. They do not succeed because Lupin just fucking gasses the entire auditorium, which is cool. And Fujiko, we get our first glimpse of Fujiko, because Fujiko, who is this sort of femme fatale character and friendly rival, or sometimes more unfriendly rival to Lupin, just nicks it off him from I think a helicopter?
She sneaks up on him in a helicopter, which is interesting. Just a completely silent helicopter.
Again, this is a story told by a child. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Also, the fact that we've introduced Fujiko means we can talk about another theme of this movie, which is, it's horny. It's real horny, which is a bit weird considering it's PG-13, right? But there's a lot There's a lot of shots of Fujiko just doing stuff, which...
My understanding is...
When your character design looks like that, it's hard not to have...
I'm getting the fucking spray bottle.
It's like the least horny Lupin movie, though. Which is great. They're all, like, they're dressed very nice, and there's some weird, like, fetishistic shots. Like, I sent y'all the image of the director saying her armpits are sexy.
Mm-hmm.
He spends a lot of time on the special features talking about... When he was like 13, he watched a part one episode where she was in the shower and he was like, I think multiple people in the special features have that. But there, it's like normally, I mean, in some of it, Lupin is just an insane rapist or he's like extra. Mm-hmm. There's a movie where he solves the secret of the JFK assassination to get laid. It's a lot of stuff like that. But
Alcatraz Connection.
Only good reason to do it.
I mean, I watched the first half of Mamo, which you also sent us. I fell asleep. My apologies. I didn't go back to it. But Fujiko is entirely naked in her introductory scene in that movie. And that's sort of a dipstick for how she exists as a character in this.
Yeah. Whereas here it's more
she is an anime woman and therefore her breasts are bigger than her head.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is like a pun on her big boobs, sort of.
Yeah, it's Fuji. Like it's Fuji Summits, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Jesus.
In the manga, originally, she was just like a series of women named Fujiko, like Bond girls, like really faceless. There's like I said, the Yamamoto miniseries is like a really great kind of exploration. There's some of the stuff that's like very feminist and very cool, and then a lot of it is just really horny with her being there as kind of a prop, too. Especially the early, like part one is really bad about it.
So the security guard, who we thought was, you know, quite alert in detecting and stopping Lupin, is then taking this book safe down to the vault, maces a guard and escapes herself because she is also stealing, but she feels bad about it. And that's how we know that she's a novice to this theft shit, right? And she's
the fact that she feels bad about it, we'll come up later.
She is on like a little two-way radio to her grandfather, We find out that her name is Letitia and her grandfather is having her steal this thing because essentially out of grandpa blackmail, just very normal relationships. Lupin then immediately breaks into her apartment to just kind of find out what's up. And he just kind of like...
We're skipping a bit of stuff. So first of all, we cut to the world's most obvious Nazi. Who is like in a double-breasted suit. He has a scar on his face. He has a gray
haircut. He's got the fash haircut.
He's got an accent, and he's there with a professor who is Letitia's grandfather, who we saw in the opening scene. And Fujiko, who's stolen the diary, delivers it to them, and they are like, "Ah, yes, Narcissus will help us with our claims." but they capture Fujiko instead. So then Lupin is captured in the back of the van with Zenigata, and we meet Goemon and Jigen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the boys. Lupin the third fellas. Has a posse.
He's got some dudes.
Well, yeah, they show up in a yellow Fiat 500, which is just a fantastic look. Jigen is like a kind of, I want to say, like marksman, quasi sort of gangster looking. He's got like a very low down hat. Was wearing a fedora and a pinstripe suit. Always smoking
constantly. Yeah.
He's the master of the Magnum. He's the greatest shot in the world. And like he like shoots the bolts off a road sign and it like falls. And yeah, he's ridiculously good shot.
Yeah, and he also has a samurai friend. Goemon.
Yeah, there's also a samurai.
Like,
yeah.
There is also a samurai in this movie.
Yeah, he has a sword that can cut through anything. Of course he does.
Yeah, Doraemon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he cuts the van in half and Lupin escapes. That's how.
Yeah, this
without
sequence,
killing anyone somehow.
Yeah, there's a lot of it's very funny the extent to which nobody gets killed very much in this movie, but you do get a lot of shots of people just fully shooting at each other. And so the first time that this happens in this movie is when Lupin is trying to steal the diary, and Inspector Zenigata, the human tomcat, goes, "Right, get him." And all of his guys just fucking try to shoot him. And it's like, it's...
like full auto, open fire.
Yeah. And until your brain catches up with the, this is cartoon rules. Until it does that, you're just like, holy shit, fuck, okay. Yeah, we really went 0 to 100 here.
You forget it's cartoon rules because the guns are like realistic as hell.
Yeah.
They like whip out some photorealistic guns and start firing. And Lupin does that sort of classic bullet dodging sort of semi dance that a lot of characters from this sort of thing do, where they're just like flinging their arms left, right, and center. Mm. And it's perfectly avoiding the hundreds of bullets being thrown his way. It's very
funny. The chase scene here, this is where this movie won me over, right? Because I had a massive smile on my face the whole way through, just because every single detail in it is so, it's so thought through. Even stuff like, you know, what kind of van are we going to use? It's like, instead of just a box with van written on the side, it's one of those sort of 60s Citroen, panel beaten ones. Every little detail from like the guns and stuff, the outfits is just perfect. And it's married with this kind of like cartoon sense of physics where you just cut the van in half and extract your friend into the sunroof of your Fiat 500.
And in the Fiat, you can see a whole bunch of dozens of cigarette butts in the console from when Jigen's been smoking. Good. And there's like grime on the windows.
Like
the amount of detail, even you, it's like blurry, you have to pause to see it, but it's like, oh man, this Jigen's driving.
And the soundtrack for this is entirely the Lupin theme, so we're talking saxophones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
It rules. This is just,
it's all Yuji Ono, the musician. He's fantastic. He's really good.
Mm-hmm. Just the episode where we saw a nice movie. So having been broken back out, Lupin then breaks into Letitia's apartment. He hadn't before, but what I got confused by is the whole time he and she are escaping in different directions, he is kind of taunting her. And then he gets arrested and gets put in the van because he saves her life, because she almost falls off of a roof. Anyway, he breaks into her apartment. This is the first time you really see Lupin like moving around in like full length. And it's kind of weird because, like we say, he's the only cartoon in a cast of humans. And because he has this kind of sing-songy voice, and because he's wearing a colorful suit and just kind of like philosophizing as he moves around very, very lithely, honestly, he reminds me of the Joker at this point. It's like he's the dang Joker.
The dang Joker.
Mm-hmm. So he tries to like get information out of Letitia about what she wants this thing for.
Because supposedly the diary, if you manage to unlock it, supposedly it will reveal the location of something that is referred to as the eclipse. Which is a great treasure, supposedly.
A boon.
And she wants to know it because she wants to know what it is because she's an aspiring archaeologist.
She is so much an aspiring archaeologist.
That's like all there is to know about
the movie's least light touch is with Letitia, right? Because she has two feelings and she feels them very deeply, which I for one identify with, which are like, I like Lupin, but I don't trust him. And also I love archaeology. She wants to go to Boston University to study archaeology, which I'm sure it's a fine university. Also very funny to me that they picked Boston University. And they make a big deal out of this. Like, this
she's obsessed with it. She's got like stuff on her wall. She's like, I have to go to Boston University.
Boston University. I have to go to the same university as AOC.
Oh, great. That's her primary character motivation. That's why she's doing this shit that her grandfather asked her to do, is because she wants to go to Boston University and he is like grandpa refusing or whatever. Like, she's such an archaeologist, but she just starts reading ancient languages.
Just
like
fun.
Multiple of them completely.
She's like, completely, this page is in ancient Hebrew and this page is in Akkadian. It's like, yeah, fine.
I'm like, no, you can't read Akkadian.
Yeah, how old is she?
Question mark.
Yeah.
I hope at least like 18, 19.
I hope that's a post-grad course you're trying to get into.
Yeah. There is a bit where Lupin is like, he pushes her up against a wall and he says like, you know, I've got lots of ways of making you talk, and she just laughs it off like, yeah, no, you're not like that.
She doesn't know, comes in her room and basically like threatens to rape her against the wall. She's like, haha, you're not like that, and then it's not brought up again. And he's for the rest of the movie. That's sort of more of the classic Lupin stuff coming in. First time I saw that, I was like, ugh!
He says at the end, I'll see you in 5 years. And it's like, do you mean when she's graduated? Or like, is she 13? Like, what
is... I'll see you when I won't get like,
checking
super arrested.
Hard drive.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Diagnosis.
So because she wants to go to Boston University, the best university in or near the city of Boston, as far as I'm concerned, go Terriers.
I looked into it.
Her grandfather calls her on the walkie-talkie and is like, okay, you got to bring me Lupin and the diary. Unbeknownst to Lupin, she
they've got the diary. They've got the diary.
Because
Fujiko gave it to them. But they so they have the Nazis, or rather the world's most obvious Nazis, they have a pendant which only gives them half the key. And we learn that Lupin has the other pendant which has the other half of the key. Because he was given it by his grandfather. Mysterious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The now public domain gentleman thief, Arsène Lupin I.
And the Bresson diary was apparently the only thing that Arsène Lupin I failed to steal, which is why Lupin III wants it.
Mm.
It's a sore spot.
Yeah.
She's real mad
he
about
stole
it.
Stole everything else. Literally
all
everything
other
else. I mean, he stole it the last time. The early part two episode where he steals the Jesus statue in Rio.
Yeah, he steals the whole statue off the hill in Rio, yeah.
Hell yeah.
And then it talks to him. Anyway.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they sneak onto a supply boat, which is going to lead them to the Nazis' hideout, which is, again, because this movie does nothing unstylishly. It's a massive cargo plane.
This plane rocks so hard. I was
so
excited.
So
the plane has some real weight to it, like some real size. Mm. It's this massive, great thing with like six engines three on each wing. It's Fantastic.
Yeah, and the reveal for this is like they're hiding on the little supply boat, and one of the Nazis fires off a flare gun, and this massive plane just comes straight down out of the cloud bank and just like lands on the water. It's incredible. Mm. This is a Lego playset ass movie, right?
Yes, it is.
It reminds me a lot of it reminds me less of Indiana Jones, and it reminds me more of my favorite line of Lego, which was the Indiana Jones ripoff before they had the rights to it. So
yes, before they were big enough to get the rights to actually do anything.
I think it was Lego World Adventures. And so you would have like a not Indiana Jones type. And like the things you remember from Indiana Jones movies, like Egyptian temples and like South American temples and like transport planes and like old timey cars and stuff. And you just kind of like smash those into each other. And that's the same attitude this movie takes. It's just like I have my big Nazi transport plane set, and I'm just going to throw that into the mix, which is great. It's fantastic. Yeah, so they sneak
aboard,
they sneak aboard. The movie shows a commendable desire to like show you absolutely no interest in how this happened. He's a master thief. Fuck you.
It just cuts to him being on board.
It's just that they didn't even swim.
They didn't even swim to the side of the plane. They must have
not even get wet.
The fuck they did that, but
yeah, did not get wet. They sneak in and they overhear our two Nazis, the professor.
There's even a bit where after they've snuck on, Lupin says something like, yeah, security here is too tight for us to sneak back off. And I'm like, how did you get on, man? Just do that backwards. What are you? it's very fun.
Yeah. So we see the two Nazis talking to each other about the eclipse. This is Lambert, the professor, is like this gold cane, very crotchety old man. And Geralt of Rivia. His name is literally Geralt. His name is Geralt.
We don't yet know that they're Nazis, but like,
come on, he's got the haircut.
Yeah, he has the accent. Like, it's like it's that.
I find it very hurtful that you're stereotyping me merely because I talk like this.
They keep talking about like soon our plans will be fulfilled. Like, it's like, yeah, come on.
Yeah, 100%.
In the subtitles and in promotional material, they call him Gerard.
Hmm.
But I'm like, no, it was not. Maybe because they didn't want like Witcher copyright. I don't know what it was, but I was very confused when I did my review trying to go back and like, wait, what was his name? But it's definitely true. In Japanese and in English, it's Geralt, you know?
Yeah, Geralt.
Geralt of Rivia, which I will be calling him from now on.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, about the plans.
They steal the diary and they open it up and for some reason it has a password that you have to input or it explodes,
which is so cool.
And for some reason Letitia's name is the password. What a coincidence. But they retrieve the diary and they learn that the eclipse is apparently a source of infinite energy which is hidden somewhere in Mexico. And in order to get to it, you have to pass three trials because we've all
Does
seen
this
Indiana
sound
Jones
familiar?
And the Last Crusade.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But then the twist, Letitia pulls a gun on him.
Yeah. And despite Lupin being able to outwit her by like unloading her gun beforehand, the Nazis are of course outside the door. He's been set up. Because he trusted dames, which is fine.
You shouldn't do that. Yeah. That's a classic part of being a gentleman thief, is you gotta not trust dames.
You gotta not do it, and we'll get some more of that in a minute. So he gets captured by these guys. I believe this is the point at which we find out that they actually are Nazis, right?
Yeah, first Fujiko escapes
slightly later. Lupin finds like sees the pin on their jackets.
Puzzle club.
Yeah, and it's like, wait a second, those are Nazi decoder rings.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, these guys are members of the SS Annenerbe. Which
is that a Pepe the Frog pin?
I don't care about defending Western culture. I really don't like brutalism. So yeah, the SS Annanarbor, a real historical thing, also, of course, in the Indiana Jones movies, just like some Nazi occult shit. Nazi occult archaeology. Bad dudes. So they try and like handcuff Lupin to the like the a rail in the cargo compartment next to Fujiko. And she again with the dames just uses him as a distraction to escape. She there are two cards.
My way of understanding this is she essentially just turns on horny mode. Like, yes. I don't just, she just like points to the guard and is like, "You're horny now." And he's like, "Hey, how you doing, Mrs.?
What's
going on
what
over here?"
That's exactly what happens. Yeah. She's like, "Hey, aren't you too cute to just be a guard?" And this one Nazi just drops everything that he's doing, including Lupin, and it's just like,
She uses her special attack. I'm like, yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And she had a very cool escape, though.
Oh, she fucking grabs that dude's head with her thighs and, like, I guess simultaneously knocks him unconscious, wrenches the handcuffs off, and then kicks the other guy unconscious. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, because dames, she doesn't like let Lupin out, but she does leave him the keys at a conveniently inconvenient distance just to be annoying.
Mm-hmm. And then she gets into a seaplane, opens up the back of the big cargo plane, and like just like jumps out with the seaplane and like flies it out. It's really fucking cool.
There's like a minigun in it, right?
Yeah.
Guys with
she
two.
Shoots at a bunch of guys, but they're like,
it's like a
30 bullets,
second
so just...
time period.
Yeah, no, but the minigun, she like picks it up off of the plane and uses it as like a handheld weapon. And then gets on out of it. Fantastic.
Yeah. He doesn't, because having no means of escape, he goes back in. He sneaks back in to listen to some more Nazi
shit. I meant he like escapes from being handcuffed up.
This.
Oh boy.
This is where we get our guy. I'm going to just be very clear. I fucked up here. On this scene, there's an opening, like the first scene, the first part of the scene, Lupin's just like sneaking around and he's reflected through the glass looking very strange. And I took a screenshot of that and put it in the group chat. And then I was happy with that. I finished. I turned the movie back on. And about 3 seconds later,
it's like, oh, fucked
it
up.
Hit me with a 15-hit combo directly to the sternum.
Yeah, this is the freight train contained in this movie that hits you. okay. Why does fashy haircut guy want this source of unlimited energy?
Who wants to take this? Who would like to explain?
He has a photograph. Taken apparently in Brazil recently, showing with the mustache.
You're talking about Adolf Hitler.
It's our boy.
Fully Hitler. It's Hitler. It's Hitler.
Hitler's
question
alive in South America.
Yeah, it's Hitler.
He still has the mustache. He hasn't shaved it off.
He's not even on some Senor Hilter shit. It's just Hitler.
He hasn't even changed his haircut. It's just Hitler. He's just got a photo of Hitler and he's like, yo, Hitler's alive. We're going to use the eclipse to bring back the Third Reich. Like, we're fully going.
My top line summary of this movie in the group chat after I'd seen it was, oh, it's a great movie. A lot more Hitler than I expected.
Oh my God, wait. Nobody spoil the thing that happens later on.
The most presence of Hitler in a comedy thing out of nowhere that I've seen other than Danger 5, right? And Danger 5, the whole joke is Hitler is omnipresent in the fucking thing. But no, in this, it just hits you out of nowhere with Hitler alive.
Hitler alive in Brazil.
The image is amazing too. He looks so stern and evil. It's like a black and white image of him old
like
in a wheelchair with this like, yeah, very intense. And not so much even just like a photo, like a paparazzi photo or something. It's like a very like
it's a gala shot. Yes. Yeah.
He's fully mean mugging the camera.
Having a great time in Rio.
Also, the other thing is in terms of like thinly sketched characters, Geralt of Rivia's whole thing is how much he loves Hitler, and he loves Hitler. There is
God,
no opportunity this man will miss to be like, Der Führer.
He's not even like ideologically, he never really talks about the ideological goals of Nazism. He just really loves Hitler.
He's fucking
he's
gay.
Just hysterically a Nazi.
He's never met him. He's got no proof that this photo is real. This is all the proof he has. And he even says explicitly, it's all the proof I need.
Yes. And like the dub is a little bit clunky sometimes in terms of its translations, I feel. So you get lines where he's like, I will brook no opposition to this. This is a normal thing for me to be saying.
I hate it when I have to brook opposition.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just a tiny bit like...
Such a Keir Starmer ass phrase.
I welcome Adolf Hitler, but I call upon him to do more.
I don't believe that Istan would say that. Thank you.
Letitia discovers them, and she's like, yo, are you guys Nazis? Yeah, and, they're like, and then the Nazi's like, throw her out of the plane.
There's a fantastic like, oh, just because we have some different ideas, you just call everyone you disagree with a Nazi,
There is a fantastic drop here where Letitia like realizes this.
Oh, yes.
And there are two things that I want to talk about here. First of all, the fact that she's like, I may have committed some light National Socialism. And secondly, the thing that bothers her more than that is theft. So the drop is...
It's crazy!
Worked with Anna Nerva without realizing it was assisting the Nazis. I was even stealing.
Not property!
I was assisting Nazis, and even worse, I stole a thing.
I stole a book.
She feels so regretful over stealing. When she maces the cop to steal the book in the first place, she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah.
She also feels bad because her grandfather, textually at this point, her grandfather is that Nazi guy. So she's like, oh, come on.
Yeah, my Nazi grandpa isn't going to send me to Boston University, go Terriers. And also, I've been committing some light fascism.
And also I'm being thrown out of a plane.
Yeah, and also I'm being thrown out of a plane without a parachute. In a very sort of Lupin moment, this is sort of fairly character-defining for me.
Yeah, go Terriers.
He just jumps straight out after her. No, because cartoon logic applies to him. So he just jumps out with perfect faith that something will come along in a minute. And it does, of course.
Yeah, they throw her out and he's been hiding the whole time watching this. And like in that instant, no fucking hesitation. He just like launches from his hiding place and leaps straight past them both. It's very fun. It's great character design. Like it's a great character moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They are falling. They're in free fall. And he like comes up after her reclining. It's just like, well,
that's
you know,
funny ass shit.
I didn't really have anything for this, so there's something that's going to be along in a minute, and of course something is along in a minute, and it's Fujiko, because she's still got the plane, and she just very, very neatly picks them both up. Mm. It's plane chase time, because again, Lego playset ass movie.
They're in a desert now. They've just gone here over the course of...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's in Mexico?
Because they go to Mexico after.
But also, they started in France, so
yeah,
not really clear where
desert.
We are right now, actually.
Ah, the French desert.
Hmm.
There are deserts in Europe. There are big deserts in Europe. There's a large desert in Romania.
That's true. Not in France.
Never heard of it.
The hell is Romania? We're actually we're the number one film reviews podcast in Romania at the moment, so shout out to that. Thanks
shout
for coming.
Out to our sole user in Romania. Yeah,
it's so, me.
Yeah, they they crash Fujiko's stolen plane and get stranded in the desert.
Shigen and Goemon are there now.
Shigen and Goemon show up. They drove to Mexico in the Fiat 500.
We're not in Mexico, are we? I don't know where the fuck we are.
They're somewhere.
It's ambiguous where they are at this point.
We're in Monument Valley, which is in Mexico, and also France.
Okay.
Also, I like that Goemon swerves to avoid catching Lupin. That's a great physical combat.
Yeah, yeah.
Just face plants into the desert and like could have died from the...
It's a good rule of three ass thing. So Letitia jumps off the plane and Jigen catches her easily. And then Fujiko jumps off and Jigen like struggles to catch her and she fucking is just like, don't say a word.
Fujiko
and
trans
then
question
Lupin jumps and they just swerve completely out of the way so he hits the ground.
Yeah.
It's good. You get such a real sense, because obviously they do, but like, even if this is the first Lupin media you're consuming, you get the real sense that these guys have been through the fucking weeds together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, this is such an established relationship.
Mm, yeah, yeah. And so the Fiat 500 sadly gets blown up by the Nazis. F's in chat, of course. Mm-hmm. And so Lupin's masterstroke is, well, there's one guy who would come and get me anywhere in the world at zero notice. Because
even
he's
the French-Mexican desert.
Because he's obsessed he's gonna, with me.
The fucking Super Sargasso Sea, where we are. This man would just
the
fucking
flip
through reality.
Yeah, and so he gets on the radio to Inspector Zenigata.
Dupin! Got you now!
Who shows up momentarily in a helicopter.
Like fucking instant later.
I have nothing else going on, man.
He really doesn't.
He doesn't.
I just love capturing Lupin the Third.
This one guy. He's kicking open doors all movie. He kicks open the helicopter door. Like,
he kicks open every door.
He kicks open, like, busts open every single door.
Yeah, he rules. ACAB except Inspector Zenigata. Yeah,
it's so, part of Interpol, we should clarify.
Yeah,
Interpol in real life doesn't arrest people too, so it's no. Nice, sort of just, like, is he even really a cop? He's a weird obsessive man.
He's just a guy.
He doesn't even work.
He's a weird guy
with like 20 large friends in uniforms.
They all play along.
Yeah, so
he just owns a trench coat.
Yeah, he and his large friends pile out of the helicopter to arrest arrest.
I'm sorry.
Lupin.
Are you saying to me, Abby, that there's some sort of distinction between being an inspector and just owning a large trench coat? Because I have been operating under some false pretenses, if that's the case.
Yeah,
I need to make some calls.
Inspector Devon, Inspector Thorne, Inspector Caldwell Kelly, and Inspector Strucci. Yeah, no, so they're...
Inspector Strucci is already a character.
Inspector Strucci was actually a character.
Yeah, I was going to say, Inspector Strucci was a character.
I'm going
to
get my
iPad.
Yeah.
Second credit for Inspector Strucci.
The cops are...
Anyway, they arrive.
Easily misdirected by a Lupin scarecrow, which Lupin has rigged up. Because, again, Bugs Bunny rules. And, like, the gang steal his helicopter while he's, like, looking in the other direction. And as they're flying away, Zenigata has two of his dudes give him a boosty like a trampoline.
And they're there for it. They're ready. They're so excited.
Yeah,
oh
they're just, we practiced so this. Whatever you say, boss. And they boosty him up to the helicopter.
Zenigata's Interpol unit have not worked a day in their life. They love this shit so much.
Mostly, this is a movie about having a nice time with your friends, whether that's a samurai and a sharpshooter or 20 to 50 cops.
Or Hitler.
You're talking about Adolf Hitler. Yeah, or Hitler.
Fucking, I can't get over that picture, which we would make the episode up, but we want to preserve the reveal, so yeah. It's gonna be like Lupin looking weird or something, but fucking hell, watch this movie.
It's burned into your brain, that image. It's such a weird, unexpected. Even watching a lot of Lupin stuff, Hitler comes up all the time, but I still didn't expect it, like, in that moment.
But they explain the situation to Zenigata.
We get this great joke where he's like, yeah, I've got you now, you're all under arrest, and we cut to him getting tied up because they have of course outnumbered him. And it's a nice little sort of visual rhyme with Lupin getting arrested in the first bit.
With the marker all over his face.
Yeah. They start drawing a goatee on him. But they convince him that the endless battle of criminal and police officer, or at least guy who owns a trench coat, needs the endless battle of master thief versus guy who owns
Don't
a trench
see a
coat
difference.
Needs to be suspended in the interests of anti-fascist praxis, there needs to be a popular front against the fucking Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
And to his credit, Zenigata is like, yeah, fair enough. I will go back to the Tom and Jerry stuff as soon as we do the Nazi thing. I can arrest you later. Which is great, considering it's his sole motivation in life. He's just willing to...
Well, we find out his other motivation is that he thinks the teacher is hot.
Yeah, he horny.
Yeah, he horny horny.
He's gonna be like half his age or a third his age.
Now I understand what this note meant. Because I take notes, and I'll be honest with you, I don't take particularly good notes. My last five bullet points... from before to now, we're just fucking incredible.
Aren't you a teacher?
Hitler alive in Brazil, dudes rock, and then dudes rock again a second time. And then I wrote with him on this one, and I can only imagine that's about how absolutely dipshit Zenigata goes.
What happens is Letitia, like, does the sort of puppy dog eyes at him, and is like, please, like, in the interests of justice, and like, because my grandfather is very mean to me, and he won't send me to Boston University, and he made me do Nazi shit.
My Nazi grandpa won't send me to Boston University. Go Terriers.
Also, I stole some things.
Yeah, and the best thing about this is the way in which Inspector Zenigata is horny is never actually physically horny. He just becomes extremely sort of military. He goes completely red, and he like salutes her, and he's like, anything for you.
That's what I mean by with him on this one. Not physically horny.
No,
just very respectful of women.
Incredibly. This man is on the respecting women juice. He has a hip flask Fantastic. Full of respecting women juice in the giant trench coat. And so they use an Interpol oil rig to...
I'm guessing that's how we crossed the Atlantic.
Yeah.
They must have been in the French desert.
Mm.
Yeah.
Whatever.
To refuel the helicopter. And we get a solid, like, 5 to 10 minutes of what I've marked down here as family revelations, right? Lupin and Letitia just take a walk and... He just
walk around the oil rig.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Walk around the oil rig, and he hits her with like a little three-hit combo of that's not your grandpa. Your grandpa was the guy who wrote this diary, Bresson, the world's greatest archaeologist, and that's why you're so into archaeology and why you're so sincere and why you hate stealing so much, and also. He must have worked with Arsène Lupin I, my grandfather, because the reason why it's the only thing in the world that he didn't steal, this diary, is because he designed the safe. And that's why the password to the thing that deactivated turned out to be Letitia, right?
Mm-hmm. Because apparently in this universe, you cannot, if your grandfather did something, you must also do that thing. Which is why after this podcast is over, I am going to go and put down the Mau Mau Rebellion.
Fucking get them. You know what? They've had it too good for too long. I'm going to go get shot down over Germany.
I may have committed some light British imperialism, and even worse, stealing.
Oh, wait, shit. That was my great-grandfather. My grandfather was actually just a cool guy who hangs out.
My favorite thing about this movie is the idea that...
We're getting allotment.
Archaeology and stealing are diametrically opposed ways of life.
They're both hereditary.
They have
nothing to do with each other. There's a bit where Lupin and Letitia are like, needs a thief. No, it needs an archaeologist. And it's like,
yeah, this should be in a museum.
Most of history, that's the same job. But
yeah, a cleverer film would have done something with that, but...
It's fine. Whatever.
This is the point at which I started noting. It's worth discussing that we watched the dub, and the dub was recorded at the outset of the coronavirus pandemic. I don't know if you've heard about this.
It sounds
And it really does sound like everyone was in a separate room which they were.
At their house. Yeah, in LA
yeah. My note is that all of Letitia's lines sound like they were recorded by the actress hiding in a cupboard, trying to keep her voice down because she had like a home invader. Like, it's all this sort of half whisper. That
yeah.
I worked with Anna Nerva without realizing it was assisting the Nazis. Like,
that's a woman speaking at full volume.
It's, and also, it must be said that none of the voices match the lips, even a little bit. Like.
Even close.
Oh, no.
No. Also, yeah. sometimes Lupin just, like, lapses fully into Heath Ledger Joker. Like, you want to know how I got these scars kind of thing? It's a little bit too sing-song. Yeah, but no, it's...
You must excuse this odd mix of languages that refuse to go entirely Japanese.
I do. The dub cast is really good. And, like, we were talking about Part 2. They did that dub in 2003. That's probably my favorite anime dub ever. It's like really funny, their performances are good, but watching this I was like, oh my god, a lot of the lines are so, the translations are so awkward and overperformed or directed poorly.
Yeah,
just like cringing again. I really respect the actors and stuff, but I was like, oh god, I can't. I don't like this.
Yeah,
that's the best bit. We love the cringe. I love cringe. That's why I watch anime.
No,
because I'm trash, and that's what I enjoy.
All right, so we go to Mexico to Teotihuacan, I believe. Which is like, that's a tourist site, but whatever. Fine. The Nazis get there first, and again, because we've all seen the Indiana Jones movies,
this is where the movie just hits you with the other fucking, like, the second of the three massive, like, out of nowhere fucking shit in this movie. It just hits you
There's
with the fact that the eclipse is apparently an alien spaceship.
It's just some magic shit, dude. It's magic.
It's a gift from, like, ancient aliens. But, like, as Geralt of Rivia insists on believing, it's a gift of ancient aliens to the Führer. He always has this, like, tone of wonderment. He talks about the Führer, which is very funny. But, yeah, no,
because... need to revive the Führer. So, they find the fucking... the entrance.
You're talking about Adolf Hitler.
Fuck off. they find the entrance to his place, and Geralt's instant instinct is just to shoot it.
Yeah. And it works.
Which does open it, so fair enough.
Yeah. Problem fucking solved. We have three trials to get through, and because Nazis.
Oh, baby.
We gotta learn that Nazis don't value human life. Geralt of Rivia is like, you, Hans, the biggest Nazi.
It's like, right.
He's the big blonde guy with a mustache. You've seen this guy in many movies.
Yes. He's the most dude's rock of my friends. I need to walk down this hallway.
I don't know. Why did they send in the biggest guy first, man? Like, that feels like a resource you would want to keep for later on. But they have like three standard twink Nazis, which is the normal troop.
Yeah.
And then big Nazi, and they send big Nazi in, and he gets crushed?
He gets
smushed.
Just like sort of
squished.
He seems fine.
The animation
though, the
layer that he's on gets compressed and he dies.
Yeah, he just tweens. Like, they just grab him.
The only, like, disturbing death in the movie.
Yeah, like, he's like, help me. And he's
scared.
Just, like, crushed into, like, nothing. Yeah.
And then Nazis go, well, fuck that. And then
they leave.
Yeah.
They go, this shit sucks, actually. Fuck this.
This shit actually funny to me. And just leave in the plane.
this fucking eclipse shit. I'm out of here, dude.
Lupin and the crew see this and go, right, we should sneak in while the Nazis are gone. And we must get to these three trials. First trial, the one that vaporized Big Hans, Letitia solves on the basis of it's written in Akkadian. You know what else was written? You know what else was written in Akkadian? The Code of Hammurabi. You know what's in the Code of Hammurabi? An eye for an eye. The whole room is covered in, like, eye motifs.
Orbs, yeah. Orbs. And there's, like, a face above the door with an eye missing. It's like, we must find the right eye to put in the eye. And it's like,
feel like
okay,
I could
whatever.
Have put that together without needing to speak Akkadian.
Yeah.
It's like there's a big hole in the wall and then like 100 different keys. And you're like, right, I reckon one of these goes in that.
Yeah, yeah.
But also there's some gravity shit going on in
yeah,
that room.
Yeah, Lupin finds the right eye, but the right eye also is a kind of like, for lack of a better word, hoverboard. Like, you can just kind of ride this eye around by holding it, yeah. And it just
you can, like, turn it, and it will make gravity either, like, reverse for just for you, or you can, like, twist it, and it'll give you, like, zero gravity. But anyway, they find it, and they solve the puzzle.
Yeah, and he pockets that, which is, to be fair, yeah. Probably a great thing for a thief to have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm. Just thief stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, what's the second trial? In the second one's Indiana Jones.
The meteor. Oh,
it's when you have to walk across a fucking invisible path thing, right? Well, yeah, no, we just ripped that off too. It basically requires a meteorite to align a path. And they're like, we don't have a meteorite. Except samurai katanas made out of iron ore from meteorites. And Goemon is like,
yeah,
I don't...
Yeah, Inspector Zenigata has this line where, like, Goemon is acting shifty, and Zenigata says, I figured it out. Your Zentatsukin is obviously a Ryo Seiken. And I'm like, yeah, dude.
This was the point at which I paused. Yeah. I went, that's it. I would have put that together as well. Also.
Oh, yeah. I know what I mean.
Yeah,
Zenigata is such an obsessive nerd about all of them. He sort of more figures it out than I already knew it. He's like, oh, that has to be what it is. I know everything about you, Goemon, because you're friends with Lupin, and I know everything about Lupin.
I've read about you extensively. This is very much the Jungle Run Monkey Temple section of it. Like,
yeah, yeah,
they're just going to make it through this. Goemon
really does not want to give up the sword. That's like his son. That's like his right hand.
He loves that sword.
He loves
the
sword so much. And so, like, even when he has to, he's like, right, I'm going to stay here with the sword to make sure nothing happens to it. They convince him not to, and even then he like talks to it like he's dropping it off on his first day in kindergarten. He's like, I'm going to be back. I'm going to be back for you.
You say they convince him. They do that through the expedient of being like, don't be a pussy, dude, come on. And he just goes like, yeah, all right, fine.
Peer pressure
fine.
Is cool and works.
Just all. He's like, I'll stay here. And they're like, no, you won't. And he's like, ah, oh, fuck. Then we reach trial number three.
Trial number
which
three.
Which is less of a trial that you have to figure out and more just like a fucking death machine.
Yeah, it's like a hallway full of lasers, and the instructions in the diary are just do cool guy shit.
Yeah, it's just like get good. This isn't a trial. This is the trailer to the movie.
Yeah.
Like, that's all this is.
Yeah, there's also sort of like, there's a Souls game like glowing thing on the ground, and when you activate it, it just pops up a thing that says get good.
Try finger but hole. That's one of my favorites for the Souls games. But yeah, no, it's like fucking lasers, and you have to do flips and stuff.
Is that bit in Ocean's 11?
He does.
Like that bit in with Catherine Zeta-Jones and Sean Connery in I want to say Entrapment.
Yeah.
So they convince Lupin to go through this again by the expedient of being like, "Come on, man, don't be a pussy," because he tries it once. Almost gets lasered and is like,
but she can shut him in the first time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's ready.
This is like when I said it as a sort of a joke, but also this is legitimately just the trailer to the movie. So there's a number of shots in this that are clearly just for the trailer that still made it into the final cut. So like when he comes back out, he does like a slow pan POV across all of his allies, and they all have what I would call character-centric facial expressions on. And it's very clearly just like, this is going to be in the trailer.
And he plays the theme music as he does all the like Bugs Bunny flips and shit through the lasers, like it's playing his theme music. He also realizes that his grandfather has previously gone through it because he notices his grandfather's cane is stuck in the roof.
Cane
and also
hat.
His grandfather's and hat is at the end of it, yeah.
The most fucked up hat in the world.
Yeah, okay, so that's actually how he solves it, is that he goes into, like, the fucking Matrix brain mode. Mm-hmm. He sees his grandfather's hat, which is a top hat, at the other end and goes like, this is how my grandfather, Arsène Lupin, the first public domain French spy, figured this out. So he grabs Jigen's hat and just fucking launches it down there and memorizes where the lasers come from.
grabs the cane on the way up, grabs the ghastly gibbous, the fucking Arsène Lupin's public domain hat at the end, and is just like, yeah, no, I'm definitely my grandfather's grandson. I'm cool now.
Also, when he takes Jigen's hat, this is the first time we get a full look at Jigen's face. Jigen is unreasonably hot in this film.
He's so way, hot. Spray bottle. So glad you brought
spray bottle. Like, damn.
Spray bottle.
Character designer talking about, yeah, we made Jigen hot, and we tried to make him more handsome in this one. It's like an interesting
it
choice.
It worked, man. He looks like Dev.
He looks like, in some other stuff, he looks like an old witch. Like a crow.
He took me a second to realize what you said. He, because in the anime, his design is very much just sort of like a half moon. Mm. His goatee comes right outwards to like 3 points. Whereas in this one, he just has like a very hot stubble arrangement. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, that's the same guy.
He is smoking hot.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Lupin and his hot friends have now deactivated all 3 traps. And can retrieve the eclipse to prevent the Nazi. Oh, whoops, no. Once again, Dr. Jones, he sees there's nothing you can possess that I cannot take away. The fucking Nazis have easily tricked Lupin by the simple expedient of sending 2 dudes, I guess they're 2 Nazi twinks, to go fly the plane away to make him think they've just left. And he falls for it. Idiot.
Mm-hmm.
They all fall for it.
Yeah, 100%. So... Geralt of Rivia and Lambert then activate the eclipse, capture Laetitia.
Have an anime villain monologue. The grandfather's just like, you will never open and I will rule them, but you are weakened, but I am. And it's like, whatever. Yeah,
you will never go to Boston University, Laetitia.
You will never meet Rhett the Boston Terrier.
We'll never see some red socks.
And that would
never be assigned a room in Miles Standish Hall.
God damn it.
The eclipse itself is like a smaller alien spaceship. It's like a platform you stand on. But they fly it out and it kind of like fuses with their plane and creates a kind of like hybrid spaceship plane.
Yeah, it looks like a cool scorpion.
Yeah, it's like a flying scorpion dragonfly thing. The temple collapses and the gang escape and they try and get away on the helicopter, but they use the eclipse to create a kind of massive.
We also get like a couple more grisly deaths. The only grisly deaths in this movie are Nazis, which I approve of, but like the twink Nazis are just like, huh? And then each sequentially get crushed entirely by massive boulders. Which is funny.
Yeah.
Good. It's practice.
Funny to me.
Now Laetitia and Geralt and the Nazi grandpa are all on the eclipse. And we think the gang are dead.
Mm-hmm. Of course, not so, because Lupin has plot powers.
Yeah.
They activate the eclipse.
Yeah, we get a very odd scene. So the professor burns the diary and he goes on a rant about how I'm not interested in giving this to the Führer. I am going to use the eclipse myself to rule the world.
Yeah, you idiots. I was only pretending to be a Nazi.
Well,
yeah.
Sort of.
He shouts at Laetitia and he chokes her. He assaults her.
Mm-hmm.
And the Nazi guy is like, you've gone insane. I'm going to kill you. And my notes are, am I meant to root for the Nazi in this scene?
Yeah, into respecting women.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Laetitia...
I'm challenging you on your unacceptable behavior here.
I'm calling you in!
The movie does do a couple of things where the Nazi grandpa is every so often presented as a little bit sympathetic, and I was just like, no. Every time it tried to give him like an even slight character beat, I'm like, fuck off.
Yeah, you're in the SS, fuck off. No, I like the idea also that like, the secret network of underground Nazis is the only place you could have gotten these resources. Like, I'm not a Nazi at all. I just happen to like work with the Nazis because those were the guys with the power to do this in 1960.
Mm-hmm. No one else.
No one else.
Just paperclip to the US. Just like do what every other German scientist did. Like, you can be protected. It's fine. Yeah, you don't have to still be a crypto Nazi.
Yeah, Wernher von Braun was launching rockets into space and he was the closest thing to the Führer guy in this movie.
Wernher von fucking Braun.
Wernher von Braun. When rockets go up.
Who cares where they come down?
Not to my department,
says Wernher von Braun.
All right, we all like Tom Lehrer.
So whilst they're arguing, Letitia tries to sabotage the controls. And the Nazi, Geralt, notices this. And he shoots at her. But the grandpa takes the bullet. And then we get this incredible exchange where he's been shot and he's dying. And she says, "Why did you do that?" And he says, "I don't know."
I really appreciate that. It's a little bit like it reminds me of the bit in OSS Sondyset, right, where he has that brief moment of self-awareness when he slaps himself in the face with the thing full of antiseptic, and while it's covering his face, he just goes, "God, I'm such a fucking asshole." He takes a bullet for her, and like in any other movie that would be like redemptive, and like no, because his commitment to being a piece of shit, and also like he's been doing it for so long that even when he takes a bullet for his adoptive granddaughter and she's like, "What did you do that for?" He's like, "Oh, no, I don't know."
The second funniest bit in this movie
just felt like it.
The funniest bit is about to happen.
Oh boy, is the funniest bit about to happen, because Geralt of Rivia, of course, he has more than one bullet, so he simply takes Letitia captive and receives news over the radio. "You have an appointment."
Oh my god.
"You have an appointment with Der Führer."
"You're talking about Adolf Hitler."
"Der Führer alive in Brazil.
You fly to the Hitler facility where we're keeping Hitler."
And Geralt, such is his commitment to Hitler. Again, I don't know that he knows anything about what the Nazi ideology is. He just fucking loves Hitler.
Hitler's his dad. It's like a very like obsessive like father figure thing for him.
Yeah, he's like, that's why he's against attacking women, is that he's actually like, he's kind of like soft liberal on the ideology, but he just loves Hitler.
God, he loves Hitler.
But he gets the call, and we cut to the outside of this facility on an island. And then we have an aerial shot of two goons wheeling someone out in a wheelchair. And then we have the shot of the feet in the wheelchair and the slow pan up.
And that's Hitler, baby.
Please do not clip this out of context, listeners. But when Hitler appeared on the screen, I stood up and clapped. I cheered when I saw Hitler. It is so fucking funny.
I saw Hitler and I clapped.
He appears in the credits as Adolf Hitler. It's Hitler. It's Hitler, baby.
He's there. He's got a mustache. He's got the foam over. He's looking a little older and he's in a wheelchair, but he's there, baby.
Agent Hitler, FBI. He's there.
They bring him the eclipse. It's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, Letitia tries to shoot Hitler by taking Geralt's gun off of him.
Yeah, okay, so that's the point. So Geralt loves Hitler, clearly.
Loves
Hitler. Hitler's like, "Yo, can I get a look at that gun?
Can I see your gun?"
And Geralt just hands it over and goes, "As you can see, it is a Luger."
It's a Mauser.
I'm so fucking sorry. I got my Hitler gun wrong. "As you can see, it is a Mauser." And Hitler's just like, "Fantastic." And it gets snatched out of his hand by Letitia, who then points it directly at his head.
And as always, kill Hitler.
Like, at this point, I'm cheering. I'm like, "Holy shit, I wanted to watch this movie about a thief. A I wasn't expecting
turn.
Fucking Hitler."
Yeah, we just swerved onto the off-ramp marked Inglourious Bastards third reel.
It's like, fuck it, shoot Hitler, all right.
Yeah. All right. We're gonna shoot Hitler. The gun does not fire, and of course she is taken away by Hitler's goons. I cannot stress enough how much Hitler is in this movie as a character. It's Hitler. It's Adolf Hitler.
Yeah, here he is. Mm-hmm. He's hanging out. He's having a good time.
He tells her, what does he say to her? He's like, "We just want to build a nice world run by a certain
chosen people.
People.
The chosen people, yeah.
I'm like, damn.
How do you do?
This is a family movie from 2019. that's the crazy part. It's a very, this movie came out very, very recently.
How would you have Adolf Hitler summarizing his own ideology in a movie for kids? Well, he wants to make a nice hang out place, vibe. But like the people, but only the people I like because I'm bad.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about Adolf Hitler.
So Hitler orders Letitia to be taken away. She is taken away. And he's like, can I have a gander at this, this bloody eclipse?
Show me
then?
This thing. Show me how it works. And of course, our guy, Geralt Rivera, is like, it would be an honor, mein Führer. Loves Hitler so much.
He's so happy.
He's like, this is the best moment of my fucking
life. We have to get through the rest of
all right. Focus. Move past the Hitler. Move through the Hitler.
Because the movie is aware at this point that it has peaked and therefore it kind of stampedes towards the end.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we have to end now.
Yeah, Hitler takes control of the eclipse. And sets a black hole to go off within the plane itself. And Geralt of Rivia is like, wait a second, you are not de Jura. And it's fucking Lupin in his...
It's Lupin, baby!
To go back to our From Russia With Love shit, just has the technology to make a perfect Hitler mask. Rips off the Hitler mask.
In his excitement learning about this, he stands up from the from the fucking wheelchair.
My God, you can walk!
It's a very Doctor Strangelove last moment.
It is,
it's
remarkable. He does like a little dance.
It's like, you're buying this? Would you believe it's a miracle? And it cuts back to Letitia and she realizes the guy who's taking her, that's Jigen, baby.
That's Jigen.
It's Jigen.
They got a bunch of tied up Nazis there because Interpol has sprung the trap on this apparently real Nazi base. Hitler, not real, I guess. Mm-hmm. But all of these Nazis real. And they've They've staged this to lure Geralt of Rivia in.
Yeah, they circulated a Photoshop or like
they
a staged
made the
photo.
Interpol made the photo of Hitler just as a hobby to see if any Nazis were like, man, that's Hitler. Yeah.
Geralt has a line where he says, but where is de Führer? And Lupin's like, he died a long time ago. Didn't you learn that in school?
Yeah, and I guess to his credit, Geralt is still like, I refuse to believe this. I've seen this photograph with my own eyes. I do not know what Adobe Photoshop Pro Trial Edition is.
The line that he says, it's so good. Like Lupin is just like, Lupin is like, we made that picture. We circulated it. We wanted to see if people would bite. And clearly you have bitten. And like, Geralt just looks at it for a bit and looks at Lupin and looks back and it goes, I absolutely refuse to put any stock in that. And he gets his gun out and tries to.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
He's like, no.
No.
Not correct. Fuck you.
Speech check failed.
And then it just initiates combat.
They fight. Lupin triggers the black hole thing. Geralt is sucked into it.
He tries to use his gun on Lupin, but back when he was Hitler earlier, he took all the bullets out. Somehow it's foreshadowed when he's like messing with the gun.
Now that's a better reading of it than I had in the moment, because in the moment I was like I'm pretty sure this is fucking Lupin. And when Letitia took the gun off him, I was like, I'm pretty sure that if she hadn't done that, his plan would have been to cold blood clock this guy with his own gun. I would have been very excited about that, but unfortunately,
imagine if he hadn't unloaded it and she had simply shot Lupin dead because he had been disguised as Hitler.
He tries to like let her know that it's him as well. He gives her like a huge wink while still disguised as Hitler.
She is not,
and understandably,
at all
doesn't take that.
No.
Yeah, she's like, I don't want Hitler winking at me. That's a whole other level of sinister.
Seventh inning stretch. Geralt gets killed. He gets sucked into the black hole. We think for a second that Lupin has also been killed, and of course he rides the eye thing that he stole down to the surface.
The little orb. The other thing I want to just flag up real quick is the smoke sim in this movie is fucking incredible. Like when when the weapon goes off either time,
it looks it terrifying.
Like, it overposits a big black hole or something, and like the smoke is gorgeous. The fluid simulation
properly,
is fantastic.
It's properly scary. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. So of course we got to start the Tom and Jerry thing again, and so we get this great sort of moment where Fujiko and Jigen and Goemon are like, "Well, it was nice seeing you." And then Zenigata remembers that he owns the trench coat that he owns, and is like, "Hey, wait!" and starts chasing them. So Laetitia gets a goodbye with Lupin, where he gives her the weird "I'll see you in 5 years" line question mark, gives her her enrollment to Boston University. So
he stole her thesis and submitted it when?
He submitted her thesis to Boston University, a thing which universities require you to do. I really hope this is a graduate thing.
Her thesis turns out Hitler's alive and also aliens are real.
A C-plot
we never discussed was that she wrote this thesis that was so good that the reason why her fake grandfather was so accepted within these Nazi circles is that he like submitted her thesis as his own.
This movie.
I don't understand.
You have
it's a very
rigorous process of peer review.
We haven't invented turn it in yet. Have no way to check.
Yeah, and so the so Lupin escapes with the boys ahead of Zenigata and his boys. And that's the movie. What an incredible hour and 40 minutes this has been.
Yeah, it's so good.
This has just been the nice movie corner. I don't know how much I have to say about this movie other than that I really fucking enjoyed it.
I've got something that, and it relates to James Bond as well.
That podcast that we do.
Yeah. So something that I noticed that this movie does very well, and it made me also realize that James Bond movies do it very badly, is this movie really effectively uses action to tell us about the character. In particular, I'm thinking of the bit early on when Lupin meets Letitia on the roof and he's like trying to get the diary off her. He gets it, but then they have this like game of keep away, and then like she's lunging at it, but he like turns it into a bit of a dance. And then she slips and falls off the roof and he stops and he catches her. And in that moment, we learn that Lupin is playful and he's silly and irreverent, but he also has a heart of gold. And like it's the movie's full of little moments like that where it's like telling us about the characters through the action. And that almost never happens in James Bond because he doesn't really have a character until Casino Royale, where there's like one moment where he bursts through a wall, and that's really the only thing it tells us about him as a character. Like this film is a really, really good case study in how to use action to tell us about the people in the film. Which I realize that James Bond never does.
No.
It only ever tells us his two character traits, which are he's lucky or someone previously gave him a gadget.
Well, I think that's the problem, is that this movie has characters to tell us about.
James You're Bond talking is, about Adolf a, Hitler.
No, not him. I was not talking about Adolf Hitler. I was talking about Lupin the Third and his fucking guys, Jigen. The only time I wrote his name, I wrote Doraemon because I thought that was funny, and I haven't made that joke at any point. And I also never wrote down his actual name, so it took me a second. Zenigata, Fujiko, fantastic, great guys. Like genuinely a very, very fun set of characters, all of their own little foibles. I enjoyed the samurai sword that just cuts through whatever the hell if he just thinks about it for a second first. Because he utilizes that a couple of times, and it takes two for you to be like, okay, yeah, this is capital H, capital T, his thing.
Yeah.
This is what he does.
This movie's more than the sum of its parts, I think. Because there's like, there's a little bit of Bond in there, not a huge amount. There's a little bit of Bond. There's a lot of Indiana Jones. There's a fair amount of actually Tomb Raider, even. But like it manages to not feel like an adaptation of any of those things because the way in which it combines them is just perfect. Yeah, it's a great movie.
There's a lot more Bond in the series. I mean, I think in the first episode of Lupin the Third Part 2, there's like another master criminal who is trying to kill Lupin, and he's like Blofeld basically. But then he puts himself into a robot body. But anyway, there's occasionally some like very Bond moments in the series. There's one where like Max Zorin is the bad guy.
See, Lupin's gun, even in this, is the Walther P-38, which is in a few of the Bond movies. He's kept it, even though it was like a Nazi Bond gun, even in a 2019 movie. He only uses it in like one shot, but it's like, oh, he's got the Walther.
Mm. Well,
you somewhat forget that he has a gun, Lupin.
Yeah, because it does cartoon logic. Yeah,
he doesn't use it in he uses it in other movies, but
yeah, he only really ever uses it to like shoot other guns out of people's hands or like shoot locks off doors and stuff. Like,
yeah. Shoot around people in order to make them duck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well,
shoot things above people that fall on them and knock them out. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
What can we say in closing about this movie that we think, other than it's good and you should watch it, and we just had a week off by watching a nice movie with our friends?
We've made some mistakes here, and the last two bonus episodes have both been about movies that we enjoyed watching.
We will rectify this by finding a terrible movie.
Our next one is going to be so bad.
Oh, it's going to be bad. Because you want us to suffer for your amusement.
Depends and, if we can do the Avengers.
And that's
still on the cards for future.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm. And so that's what we're going to do. In the meantime, Shannon, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Mm. Thank you for having me. I like going on podcasts and I like talking about Lupin.
Yeah, where can people find you? We had the bio up front, but just and we'll put some links in the description. But if people want more Shannon Strucci, where do they go?
You can find me on Twitter at Plenty of Alcoves. If you go on YouTube and you type in Strucci movies or Fake Friends Parasocial, you can find my video essay work. I did a review of the first, and I'm really happy with how that came out. You want to watch that? I'm the film correspondent, like I said, for Struggle Session. That's at Struggle Sesh, and Critical Bits, the actual play I'm on, is at Critical Bit Cast.
Oh yeah. All right. Well,
I've only just recently realized that when we say something like links will be in the description, I have to actually put those in there.
You have to do that. I'm creating work for you.
I continually forget that that's a thing we do.
Yes.
shit, fuck. Those will be in the description. I swear to God.
Right. Well, we all have to go and do what our grandfathers did now. That's the law.
That is the law.
I'm going to go and have an allotment.
I have to go and record. I have to go and like run a session of a tabletop role playing game, just like my grandfather did before me. Thanks for listening.
I'm going to scare my granddaughter by taking out my teeth.
Anyone involved in that, Alice, must be a real loser. Thank you for listening to yet another episode of Kill James Bond. As our patrons, you help us make this the best that it could possibly be, and you help me afford to eat, which. Frankly whips, as far as I'm concerned. Special thanks to our £15 and above patrons, and those are the illustrious Jack Holmes, Paint McCalla, Amanda Rogder, Nikki, Field Commissar Jen Jen, Kentucky Fried Commie, Amanda Comet, Jack Bushell, Larry Kins, Timothy Pajoni, Tripp, Josh Simmons, Elizabeth Cox, Alfredo, Raul Leal, Jonas Schwamberger, Zoe Shepherd, and Robbie Morgan. Couple of new names in there, thank you. By the time you are hearing this, our website will be live. Along with it, pre-orders for our first Kill James Bond merchandise, a t-shirt that I helped design called The Connery. This is printed by an independent shop in the Southwest, the same people that Trash Future use, so if you've ever had one of their shirts, you know the kind of quality we are working with here. And as a special thanks to our patrons, check your inboxes right now to find a £5 off code. Just little things that I do for you, you know. Kill James Bond will return in The Man with the Golden Gun for free next week, and our next bonus episode is to be decided. This has been Kill James Bond, starring Alice, Abigail, and Devon. Our producer is Nate Bethay, our podcast art is by Matt Lubchansky, and our beautiful website was designed by Tom Allen. See ya.